Aaron Rodgers wasn't the only thing Pittsburgh was waiting for.
They firmly believe that Aaron Rodgers will be their quarterback. Look, they're not stupid.
The U.S. Open heads just outside the Steel City.
We believe there are just certain places in our game where you stand on the first tee and you look out over the landscape, and it is just meant to play the U.S. Open. Oakmont is that place.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Spray.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Dirt and Spray on 1080.
The club prides itself on being America's greatest test of golf.
The Fan.
Hey, let's do this final hour. Dirt and Spray here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan, 99.5 HT2, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're beating the heat and had a great weekend.
It's warm out there already, man.
It was toasty today, man. Toasty today. That sun was shining, though, when I left the house this morning. It felt fantastic.
I know sometimes it gets too hot, and we got to worry about people being overheated, not hydrating enough. I just... Anytime I hear the clouds might be coming back, it's making me sad.
Is it? Yeah.
So I was asking the wife, because she follows the weather, and she's like, it's supposed to be nice every day, except Thursday, maybe?
Yeah.
Might be cloudy, but I'm like, oh, God.
Cloudy and 82. Not good enough for me anymore, all right? We've set the standard high early in June.
Sun just makes me happy.
You got to live up to it the rest of the month. We've got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Mike Doc Parker's going to join us coming up in a little over 13 minutes, and we'll talk some Beaver baseball with him as they punch their ticket to Omaha last night down in Corvallis. The biggest sports news of the weekend probably was the House settlement finally being approved. So for those who don't know what's going on here, you should, but if you don't, essentially thousands of former athletes are now going to be paid a whopping $2.8 billion in back pay.
You thought this was bigger than Nick Chubb joining the Texans or the Packers cutting Jaire Alexander?
Look, it's a coin flip. It could go either way. 51-49, if you will. But I would slightly lean this direction, although this is just going to be the first of a long series of lawsuits. That basically the NCAA did not follow through with pursuing this because they were sued by all these former players, and they agreed to settle because if they lost a lawsuit, it could have cost them up to $10 billion. So it's not going to quite cost them that much, and they've decided to settle, and now we finally have the approval on it. A lot of notes out of this and the direction the college athletics is going seems to be on as uncertain ground as we have ever seen. What was the biggest takeaway from you reading about all of this and what it means for college athletics?
Well, I guess I should have asked that question differently. I know it was dirtier and a more Wild West when we didn't know. So to Dan Wetzel's point, I'm glad at least it's out in the open. What I guess I mean is, just because there's going to be a cap on how much you can spend doesn't mean you're not going to have a Texas go for $70 to $80 million with cap and booster money.
Yeah.
And so I think this world of college football has opened up the playing field. I don't think it has solved the playing field. I think you can be in Arizona State and you can say, look at us. We made a playoff. Yee! You're not beating Ohio State because Ohio State is going to spend more money and get more talent than you. Doesn't mean you can't have feel-good stories, have a Boise State in there once in a blue moon, but their celebration isn't a national championship. Their celebration is making it.
Yeah.
All the other players, the big-name players, will continue to be hoisting that trophy. So, yeah, I guess it's more transparent, but what is the point of saying you have a cap if the collectives can still go spend $15 million and then the NI deals can still total $20 million by themselves? And then also, who approves what is value? Yeah. I think Dan's point on Caitlin Clark is a good one. You could find a basketball player that you say, don't really know him. Let's take the guy at UW, the kid that transferred in that reportedly had a $2 million deal. UW didn't have a good season in men's basketball. They paid him a huge sum. Who's to say that he's not worth $2 million from an NIL collective versus, well, what was their ticket distribution? How much more seats did that kid help sell because they were excited to see him? You know, there are little things you can point to. I don't think this is just going to go away and be okayed. You're going to have real fight on what is okay versus what's not. And when it's not, they're just going to find ways to manipulate and change to make you say it's okay.
Yeah, I think the Texas Tech pitcher in softball is a great example of this.
Did you see the coach?
No, I didn't see what the coach said.
He basically was like, why are people talking about this? Do you talk about every player that makes $1 million in basketball or football?
No, you don't.
So why do we care that we want to pay $1 million for our pitcher?
Well, and that's the whole point is that they gave this gal $1 million. She's going to make $1.2 million next year. I think she had 2 years of eligibility left. She transferred from Stanford. Texas Tech was, a game away from winning the national championship this year.
It paid off.
Largely because of her.
Yeah.
And if this entity had existed, you know, a calendar year ago, when she entered the portal, that contract would have had to have gone for approval. And they very easily could have responded and said, no, you're not worth $1 million. When who are you to tell anybody what they are or are not worth? That's the hardest part that I have with all of this. Of how do you get somebody, an arbitrary panel of people, to come together and say your value, according to our algorithm, is $462,000. You cannot accept that $1 million offer. As these continue to mount and the more of them they get shut down, there's just going to be lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit of a free market system that I'm worth what somebody is willing to pay me to do. And I don't understand how any of this is going to play out long term in a successful way in the way that they're envisioning. The other part of this, to your point about it being, you know, going from a shady era to basically an era where everything was above the table. I thought our friend Gary Parrish had a great piece on this on CBS over the weekend. So you have this salary cap now that these schools are going to be allowed to spend $20 million on athletics. The rough estimates from most major universities, it's going to be $15-ish million in football, 3 or 4 men's basketball, and then everybody else splits up the rest of the pie. Do we realize there's big-time college basketball players who don't, you know, universities that don't even have a football team?
Yeah, Villanova.
Well, I know they do, but they're
Saint
not
John's doesn't
Saint John's,
have one.
Gonzaga. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of big time college basketball programs that don't have a football team. So you're essentially telling them, hey, you now have $20 million. If you're Gonzaga and I got $20 million to spend on athletics, how much of that is going to men's basketball?
Right. Most of
$16 million? And that's not going to be the case in the SEC.
Well, they're not going to have that much. Some of these conferences, like Villanova's in a smaller, so
sure,
they'll have 10. But like, if they can spend 8 of their 10.
That's more than the big schools are going to be spending in the SEC on their men's basketball team. And you think they're just going to roll over and say, well, golly gee willigers, St. John's is outspending us on recruits. Of course they're not. They're going to find ways to pay these guys, whether it's through NIL money that will ultimately get approved or under the table and go back to the era that we were in. Like, a lot of this is good because it's pushing the ball forward in terms of legitimizing the, you know, contracts and playing. And I know they're not specifically contracts, but getting these players and athletes money directly from the schools, they're getting a piece of pie that they deserve because the money's coming from ticket sales, ad sales, television revenue, and all of those are directly correlated to the players and what they bring in ad dollars, ticket sales, and people wanting to watch them play and watch their universities play. I don't understand how this doesn't end up in another 650 lawsuits over the next 2 to 3 years and just continue to unravel from here.
So part of this is about the money, right? Like, how much money are you going to spend? Well, what's that pressure going to be on these programs to spend and spend and spend? This literally came out 10 minutes ago. Ben Portnoy of the Sports Business Journal is announcing that a private
equity group,
Elevate, is announcing the launch of a $500 million campaign. And Ross Dellinger's followed up and said two power conference athletic departments have entered into an agreement with private capital funding.
Yes.
So they're getting a lot of money, and then they spend it all like a bunch of idiots. They don't know how to spend their money. And then when they're desperate because they don't want to become irrelevant, they enter into private capital funding. What will they do? They will gut entire athletic departments, mass layoffs. They'll end sports programs.
Yeah.
They'll back money, and then when they can't pay that, they'll own it. And it's just like, look what we're doing. What are we doing?
Watching the fallout of it is going to be fascinating because there's no doubt the sport, but all of college athletics in general has changed forever.
They don't
going
know what
forward.
They're doing.
They have no clue what they're doing.
They just don't know what they're doing.
There's nobody in charge. The irony of all of this is they could have just simply avoided it if 10, 15 years ago they didn't fight against paying athletes. Like, a lot of this started with the NCAA video game stuff where they wanted to pay the players and they said no. The game ultimately had to shut down, and then you get all these lawsuits that come out of it. Speaking of which, this is a total nerd off the wall thought, but did you see what EA Sports is doing with their new college football game?
I didn't know.
Did you see this, Ortner? So they're coming out with a new game. It comes out in July.
Okay.
They directly pay the players for being in the game. You get a very small check.
It's
and
a
you
tiny
get a copy
amount,
of the game.
Right?
It's not a lot of money. Yeah. But there's also an allotment of money that now that they are going to give to schools based on the amount of time that that team has played with in the game.
Oh, so like Ohio State's probably used one of the more.
Whoever has used
the
most.
Money.
And so a lot of people online are joking, like, what program should we go prop up and just play as that program?
But they're not
and they get
that.
That it's not going to be an insane amount of money, but it is a funny fallout of all of that.
We just need Roaring Kitty to get all the GameStop bros, yeah, and then we all go in on like Akron.
Akron
like,
is
let's
just,
make the Zips awesome again.
Dude, the Zips become dominant, man. They become dominant. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of offshoots of this. I chuckle at times with the, you know, people arguing the disparity between the haves and have-nots are growing, and if you don't have big money boosters, you can't hang in an NIL era. And I would say, are you new to college athletics?
I know. I
has there ever been an era in which this wasn't a have versus have-not?
Like, right.
Do people in Pullman, Washington think they have the same legitimate chance at winning a national championship as Alabama does? There's the money, the infrastructure, the resources, the stadium, the attendance, the everything that's poured into it. Like, it's you live on different planets, man. Like, that's always been college athletics. What I think has happened in the last handful of years is you've had more universities who could have been in the have conversation who are now elevated further up in the have conversation because their big time boosters are allowed to spend money. And there's a lot of really rich people out there who don't have the money to buy a professional sports franchise, but they got a lot of money sitting around and they want to spend it on their alma mater.
Well, I think there's not any one thing to point to, right? It's ineptitude by the NCAA. It's gross mismanagement of finances by multiple universities, too many to count. It's the death of a conference. It's the creation of super conferences. It's the expansion of a playoff with the never-ending expansion. It's a power grab by two conferences to control the entire entity in itself. There's not one single issue. It's just a bunch of issues that have basically killed college athletics.
Yeah, as we know it.
I mean, that's, you know, they'll have the logos, and I still think we're headed for a time, and we're pretty close, I think. You're not even going to have players that go to school there. You're just going to pay athletes, and yep. They're just going to be athletes, employees, and won't even attend a class. There will be no, like, what's the point?
You signed a 3-year contract? You're going to come play football here for 3 years?
Your grades aren't good enough. Yeah, yeah. And
who cares?
I major in football, bitch.
That's what I'm here to do. Damn it. Yeah, the other parts of this settlement agreement are there is a new enforcement entity, a new non-NCAA enforcement entity. It is going to be called the College Sports Commission. This will definitely work. It's headed by a guy.
Is this the Trump thing?
No, this is not. This is a guy. They hired a guy from Major League Baseball away. He is going to be the head investigator for all enforcement matters. They are in charge of assuring that schools remain under the cap and that third-party NIL deals with athletes are not phony booster-backed deals that have become prevalent in the last handful of years. We'll see how they go in implementing that. They also have this new NIL clearinghouse thing where basically every NIL contract over $600 in value has to be submitted to this third party. They are expected to approve or disapprove deals in as little as one day. Athletes then can resubmit rejected deals once certain suggestions are made. You know, you could say, I want $100,000. They come back and say you only want $50,000. The player then can alter the deal to align with their suggested figure, or the school can cover the difference by accepting a reduction against the revenue pool cap. Are you following all this? Yes, it's not convoluted at all. This is the part of it that I have the hardest time seeing work and implement when you're telling people what their worth is and you're not worth X amount of money, even though this university or this booster is willing to pay you X amount of money. I don't understand how that holds up in a court of law.
I just want to talk about Tiago Splitter developing Donovan Klinger. That's all I want to talk about.
Will he develop the Klinger? So that's the big news of the weekend. House settlement finally been approved.
It's never ending. It's
never ending.
More crap that comes from this.
More lawsuits.
And ugh, it's so annoying.
More lawsuits to follow, but now you can pay your athletes directly. Welcome to the new world of college athletics.
Basically.
Let's talk to Mike Doc Parker. How much of Oregon State's new revenue-sharing money should go to their baseball program?
I think a higher percentage than most.
Dude, just go 100%. Just win every national championship.
No.
Give up on every other sport. Become a baseball powerhouse that wins every title.
We are, and we haven't even done that.
We'll talk to Mike Doc Parker, the voice of the Beavs. That is next on The Fam. All right, big one down in Corvallis last night. I think the party's still going on as the Beavers are heading back to Omaha. Joining us now is our good friend, Mike Doc Parker, the voice.
He was not paying attention to us at all, was he?
No, I was not. You guys are going to play a sound here. All right, hit me with the sound. Fire it away.
Keljo comes set. Nelly's 3-2 pitch taken. Strike three, call. The Beavers return to Omaha.
I mean, anytime I get to hear Mike Parker's voice, it makes me happy.
Well, Mike probably doesn't like it, so I want Mike to grade his own call.
All right, MEP OSU on Twitter, the voice of Oregon State, all of their athletics, but baseball and heading back to Omaha. Doc, good morning to you. Grade the call.
Hey, good morning. Well, not you know, it's the type of thing where it was such a wild game, guys, that, you know, early in the game when the Beavers were up 13-3 and 14-4, I had the luxury of sort of, okay, what should I say at the end? but then, you know, the problem is, and I think any of us in the profession shouldn't ever try to do that and just try to go with what occurs in the moment rather than try to script anything out or, you know, premeditate on it. And so, but when 14-4 became 14-6 and then 14-8 and then 14-10, now I'm worried about, man, I'm glad I didn't pre-script anything. I may have to rewrite completely.
Yeah,
so I just, in the moment, I was just glad to call that the Beavers are returning to Omaha. And, you know, it's not a great one, but for me, the whole weekend was just a joy to watch. This whole postseason, as you docs know, has been pretty amazing.
Oh, it's a remarkable run here by Canham and Company. They get to Omaha, first time under Mitch. I got to be honest, this is why you're the best and why you're better at your job than I ever would be at mine. I would just want to say, suck on that one, Florida State. Like, I just go real brutal and mean, and I probably wouldn't last very long in your
profession. The thoughts occur to me, but I tend to reject them. But I'm actually proud of you, Brandon. If you go ahead and go with it, you have more courage than I do in my life.
Well, what Dirt doesn't know, or maybe he does, was I had to debate when to ask you to get on the show because I don't want to text you at 9:30, but I also don't want to text in the fourth inning, even though they scored all the runs so early. So I'm kind of waiting until about, I think it was 8th or 7th, and I'm like,
you don't want to jinx anything.
I didn't want to jinx it.
Because he texted me, he said, I'll ask Doc to come on if they win, and then they go up 7-2, and I'm like, well, are we going to ask him? This thing's looking pretty good in my eyes, but I'm also not emotionally tied to it like that. Like, when you look at the weekend as a whole, Doc, this has been a thing now. Can he get back to Omaha? Will he live up to this, you know, the shadow of Casey and all that nonsense that a very small minority in the fan base have done? Because the guy's done nothing but win. He just hasn't quite won at the highest level yet. They punched their ticket first time since 2018, I believe, that they're going back to Omaha. Mm-hmm. Just kind of encapsulate the entire weekend from the comeback to Friday, the pitcher's duel on Saturday, and then just home run and runs bonanza last night.
It was the last two weekends, guys, have just been an example of a couple of things. One, you know, the grit for the team. That's true. Built through 24,000 miles of travel, all the games away from Corvallis, I think helped prepare them for a moment to take advantage of the reward of getting to be at home for all of those miles logged and the difficult challenges on the road. So that, to have a decisive winner take all on Monday against USC to settle the Corvallis regional, and they romped in that one 9-0, and to have a decisive super regional at home, that again they worked so hard to earn that opportunity. Though the sight, Goss being at home, gave the team just a tremendous lift. Like, hey, we've got this. Goss will get them. We'll get them, and we're going to find our way through. But to get to those decisive games, as you've alluded to, took a lot of work. And I give Mitch credit for keeping the team and the guys up the entire year. And Brandon, what you alluded to, you know, the shadow of the great Pat Casey who built the program, Mitch was a big part of it as a player, going to Omaha three straight years and winning two national championships. But you're right. I do think you said it's a faction of the fan base, and every fan base has a cadre or a faction that. And I don't think it's out of malice. I don't think it's out of ill will. I think it's just out of, and sometimes it's out of just such a deep love and affection for the place that, oh, how can we walk that guy in four pitches? And I feel that way sometimes as a broadcaster. I'm up 13-3 and Segura falls behind 2-0 and I'm just bemoaning my future. Oh my gosh, it's 2-0. So I understand. The fans that look at things that way and then will, you know, hold Mitch or Rich Dorman or whoever, well, we should have won that game because of this, that, or the other. what the last couple of weeks have shown is just how difficult baseball is and the amazing variety that the game presents. And as you said, I mean, the comeback for the ages on Friday, just one good inning, really, offensively in that game, one good inning. But the pitching had been good enough to give them a shot going to the bottom of the ninth, and they score three against all odds. They really did. That was one of the more amazing things I've ever seen. Then they get just stymied, shut down by great Florida State pitching on Saturday. And yesterday it looked like, you know, I mean, the buntapalooza they had against USC that Mitch called it on Monday when they bunted four times in an inning, that turned into, you know, just a home run derby, the home run palooza with five of them and a 14-4 lead after four innings. So I think I felt in answering your text, I did so before the game was over, didn't I, Brandon? Mm-hmm. I do think you could check the timeline. And I'm sure all of these things will be subpoenaed at some point, and we'll, you know, we'll all have to, you know, be held accountable. But when did you send the text? What did you, you know, what did I know, and when did I know it? Well, I sent you the text, I think, while the Beavers were still trying to close the deal, didn't I?
Correct, Amundo. It was the eighth inning. I was like, this is
all confidence. Never a doubt. Never a doubt.
No. You know, I have a 60-second, you know, 60 seconds to kind of send those texts out during broadcast breaks on the network. And so I worried, though, when I said, hey, Doc, pick the time, because you said either 8 or 8:15. I said, I'm good to go either way. But after I hit send and then I saw a couple of runs score, I thought it was my fault by agreeing to come on your show, because I didn't give you any caveat, like only if they win, Brandon, only if they win.
I should have put that in the question. Only if they win, Doc, can we get you on at 8 or 8:15? Can I ask you baseball question? I don't notice these things quite as much as you would on being in the day-to-day and traveling and calling these games for the team, but in what ways are they different with Mitch versus when Pat was the coach?
I would say Mitch is considerably younger, you know, yesterday than Pat was at the end of his run. Mm-hmm. And I do think, I think that manifests itself in some of the energy on the long bus rides, and Mitch will get involved sometimes in the choice of music that everybody listens to, kind of has a no phones, cell phone policy. Now, Pat Casey's brother, Chris, at George Fox, had kind of, as you guys probably remember, I mean, he wouldn't let the guys have phones at all on bus trips and playing football there when he was coaching. And it was written about and talked about, and we talked to Chris about that. Pat, you know, Pat was kind of coming at the end of all of that in his career, the beginnings of people just constantly on devices and social media and all of that. But Mitch is just a... I think he's, I don't want a player's coach. I'm not sure if that's the right term to use. I think he's a little bit more, he's got on the exterior, certainly more on a moment-to-moment basis, laughing with the guys, joking around with them.
Relatable.
Around the batting cage. In the hotel. Mm-hmm. Relatable is a good word for it, Doc. Mm-hmm. Pat Casey had such an aura about him. Guys loved him and respected him, but he was a tough son of a gun. Mitch can be that way, too, when he needs to be. And again, that's why I give a great deal of credit to the way he kept the team through the ups and downs and that four-game losing streak against Oregon. There were moments and times where I think a lot of our fans, and I think it even ran through my mind, could that four-game stretch cost the Beavers everything they've been working on? The national seed, even hosting a home regional, how would they respond to it? Well, Mitch responded as he always does. He's a great person, figure, mentor to these guys, but has a bit more of an understanding of where they are in their youthful ways and trying to deal with all of this stuff. So they're both great people and men and leaders of men. Pat Casey is the most competitive person I've ever been around in my life. And I always learn something when I'm with him. Just a quick telephone conversation. We've had several here of late during this postseason, and I just come away going, man, that guy's good. He's good at everything he does. And Mitch Canham gives me similar feelings, but how would I put this? Maybe he, in a less profound sort of way, but when you come away from Mitch and you watch Mitch interact with his players, you see, now there's a guy that gets it, and there's somebody that's deeply respected and loved by his players too, in a different kind of way. They're both great coaches and great people I've had the honor of working with. And it is a little different. It's a little more, it's a little looser, I would say, and with the music and the rambunctiousness getting on and off a bus and all of that than maybe some of the things I remember in the KC era. But I'm honored to have been able to work with both guys.
Yeah, now he's going to the Omaha for the first time. You've been to Omaha a number of times, Doc. We're talking with Mike Parker, a longtime voice of Oregon State Athletics. A lot of trips to Omaha for you over the years, so I'll ask. I've never been to the new stadium, but I have been to Rosenblatt, or I did go to Rosenblatt. Mm-hmm. Do you miss old Rosenblatt? Are you one of those guys? I see that a lot when this Omaha stuff comes up. And what's the one thing that's on your list every time you go to Omaha? Do you got one thing that you got to do or one place you got to go?
It's a good question, and you know me. I mean, you know, I'm the newest school cutting edge guy ever, so I have no nostalgia in me whatsoever for Fenway Park or Scheib Park, or which became Connie Mack, or, you know, for the days of the old professor and Casey Stengel. I know nothing about that stuff, nor do I care. I'm all about the here and now and the present. So this whole nostalgia for Rosenblatt thing, no, believe me, I loved that place. I love Rosenblatt Stadium, the feel, the smells as you walked in. I mean, you knew you were at Rosenblatt. The new ballpark is magnificent. It was TD Ameritrade the last time I was there. It's Charles Schwab now. And I love that place, too. So I've had three at Rosenblatt, 5, 6, and 7, 13, 17, and 18 in the new ballpark. And I still hurt over 13 when Danny Hayes pummeled a ball that their local columnist said, had Hayes hit that ball in Rosenblatt against Mississippi State, it would have ended up in the gorilla pen at the zoo across the street. So I sort of held TD Ameritrade. I was angry with the ballpark that first trip back there in 2013 because it wasn't hitter-friendly enough. I love good pitching. I love good defense. I love a 3-2 ball game. Matt Boyd beat Indiana there 1-0 in the College World Series in 2013, and it was a thrilling game at 1-0. But they've tailored things a little bit more, fixed some things there, and it plays to me a little bit more legitimately than it did early. So it's a beautiful, clean, new, bright, wonderful ballpark. But those memories in Rosenblatt and the Henry Dorley Zoo, literally right across the street, you know, my kids grew up in that zoo and in that ballpark. My two daughters, I mean, those family trips, 5, 6, and 7 guys, are among the best times for the Parker family ever to enjoy Beaver athletics and Beaver baseball in that venue. My wife and kids and I would go when I had opportunity, would spend the entire day at the, they bought a year-long membership when we'd go back there because they went just about every day, so it was cheaper to buy a year-long membership. And they did that 3 straight years and would spend all day at the zoo and ball game came, come over to the ballpark and watch the Beavers in those memorable days. So I have great memories of both places, and I'm looking forward to making a few more this weekend and next in Omaha.
It's the last one I got for you, Doc. That might be also the most random membership of anybody in America, a guy living in Corvallis, membership at an Omaha, Nebraska zoo. Random.
It's a great zoo, by the way. My grandparents, I used to go there all the time with them. Whenever we'd go back to Omaha to visit them, it's an underrated, really good zoo.
Yes, it is.
So the bracket has shaken out very interestingly. Obviously, Arkansas is going back. They're a 3 seed. They look like a wagon. They look like they're very hungry to get their College World Series that they haven't. Carolina loses. Vandy's out. Like, you've had 2 seed Texas gone. You've got some Cinderella stories mixed in with some, oh, my God, how is UCLA doing this? They were so bad last year. How do you like the bracket for Oregon State as they get ready to go to Omaha? I know we wait for Duke and Murray State, but just the teams that are in Omaha punch the ticket. How are we feeling about Oregon State going into it?
You know, I haven't done much on it yet other than to know it's Louisville and then an opportunity against either Coastal Carolina or Arizona. Arizona is one of those Cinderella stories and a familiar opponent to Oregon State. In that sense, I think it's shaken out reasonably well, you know, and the Beavers were one of the 8 national seeds that managed to survive. I was stunned that Arizona, I mean, to me, of all the results, Arizona beating North Carolina and Chapel Hill after losing 18-2 in the opener is one of the more astonishing turnarounds in this postseason. But, you know, I think there's a path there, and the Beaver frontline starting pitching, you know, the final score yesterday, 14-10, let's go. No, the pitching was good, and the Beavers have good pitching. Yesterday, both offenses really came to life, and the Beavers had more of it than Florida State, which, by the way, is really good. That they pitched in extremely well. I'm not sure what kind of pitching. I haven't even gotten into Louisville yet, or what Coastal and Arizona and the teams on the other side. I'm not there yet, guys. But I think there's a path here. And wouldn't it be something? What if Arkansas and Oregon State would end up playing for it again? I'm not sure Razorback fans would be too keen on that.
A little PTSD for those Razorbacks down there in Arkansas. I enjoyed this text. We'll let you go on this. Somebody texted in. Hearing Mike Parker talk always puts a smile on my face. He could be telling me an asteroid is hurling towards the Earth, ending humanity, and I would still have a grin on my face. Well, that asteroid's not on the way, but we have grins on our face. Mike Parker, I'm sure you're grinning down in Corvallis. Hopefully you got a little bit of sleep last night. Enjoy another trip to Omaha, Doc. We always appreciate the time. Have fun.
Thanks. Hey, guys, and please send that text to a Hollywood producer the next time they make a film about the asteroid coming.
Yes.
And there have been quite a few of them. I'd love to get a part just to calm the people of the world. If I have that effect, I think they ought to put that in a movie. Hey, guys, it's great talking to you. Thanks for having me on. Love you guys. Keep up the good work, and let's go Bees in Omaha. Thanks.
There you go. Mike Doc Parker.
Consummate pro right there.
He's the best.
Oh,
we love chatting with him, and they're heading back to Omaha. You ever contemplate going to one of these bad boys?
I actually was thinking about it. You know me. I don't watch all these games, but like when they're on and it's the Supers, I do like start to kind of get a little into it. And
go
I was
take some Jello shots in Omaha.
I was like, you know, I haven't been to Omaha. I've never seen it live.
Yeah,
it'd be really cool to go back.
We drove by the stadium when we were there for the football game.
I remember it, and I just kept thinking, oh, wish I would have gone in one of those games. I also don't want to go, and the one time I go is the year they don't win.
Yeah, you always got that fear, because there's nothing worse than spending money to travel to watch your team play, and then they lose in heartbreaking fashion, and then you got the return flight.
It's a bit of a problem.
It's a whole, you know, I've experienced a handful of those over the years, and they're not enjoyable. The win's much more enjoyable. But Oregon State heading back to Omaha and looking for their first championship since 2018. He was the last one, right?
Yeah.
Last time they were there in Omaha. It's the last time they won it. Mike Doc Parker. Great friend of the program. We got to get back on the clock. We're a little bit late here. Stanley Cup Final Game 3 is tonight. Also, another fallout in college base I want to talk about. We'll get to that next. First, here's us with a FUP date. Man, from Kanye West to Chicago, name me another radio station in the country that does that. Does Will Ortner know who Chicago is?
It's a great city.
You're not wrong.
And there was like a play about it, I think, and John C. Reilly was in it. It was a movie.
I think one of those artists shouldn't be played on our station. we don't take our music out.
Look, I'm going to enjoy the music still. It's a good song. Okay,
Separating art from artists.
It's not my fault that he became a Nazi. Now I don't get to enjoy good content anymore.
Pre-Life of Pablo Kanye is awesome.
He is unbelievable. His first couple albums are up there was
Pablo,
the best.
Actually. Yeah. I thought that was a great album.
No, I'm saying, like, that's the end.
At all.
Yeah,
if
that
you
was the
say
end for
you
sure.
like Kanye Definitely. After that, I probably don't like you.
Nobody likes Kanye. You shouldn't like Kanye. Well, you know, some Nazis might like Kanye after that, but Nazi Kanye elite, dude.
But my problem is Kanye elite. Nazi gets money from pre Kanye Nazi.
Yeah, sure he does. It's not that. It's a drop in the bucket.
I know, but I don't
I'm
want
taking
a Nazi
me
to
not
get
listening
money.
To family business is going to take away from Kanye West's bottom line. Really, that's going to impact him. It's a good song.
God, that was my favorite song in 2004.
Beaver fans chiming in about how great the Omaha experience is going for the College World Series.
Yeah.
I think you got to go one of these years, man. You
well,
got to go.
So here's the thing. So we got surprised yesterday. Unexpectedly with 49er preseason home game against Bo Nix and the Broncos.
Look
in August.
At you. You're going down to San Francisco / Santa Clara for a preseason game?
So we would fly out after our show on Friday, so the 8th. We'd get down there in the afternoon, and then we would rent a car, and we'd hang out, and then we'd go to the game Saturday, and we'd fly back Sunday, and I'd be here. So I wouldn't miss any show.
Sure. That's a pretty easy weekend trip.
And it's you also, I've never been to Santa Clara Stadium, so Levi's, and the good thing about the game is I've seen my team live.
Yeah.
They won.
Yes.
This game, they could lose, and I wouldn't care because it doesn't count.
You just had a football game. It's August. Who cares?
Right. So it's kind of the best situation. But now I'm like, the Beavers are going to Omaha. I've got Miles. But I don't know what to do here. I kind of want to go. It
now, when does
want to go?
What's the schedule look like? When does it all start?
I think it starts Friday.
Friday is when it all begins.
Don't,
everybody plays Friday.
Well, I mean, it's a rotation. I think it's a staggered rotation.
Okay, so not everybody plays Friday. Okay,
yeah.
Well, you only got there's only eight teams there. You only got four games.
I don't think they're doing a four gamer thing.
You should do a four gamer on day one. Why would we not?
Can you not quote me on the schedule? Because I know you're looking it up. And you're
gonna,
they do have four games Friday.
Actually,
but
you idiot.
I don't know, but I know. I think it starts Friday.
Friday. There are two games Friday.
Yeah,
it appears they are all still to be determined. Who's going to play wins?
They
got to
figure out the bracket, and I think it's double elimination. So, like, you know, there's a whole thing to sort out there. But it's Friday.
So you got two games Friday, two games Saturday, two games Sunday.
Flying in Omaha is not
flying in Omaha is not a cheap flight. No. That is for certain. You could drive out there. I drove to the Final Four to watch my team play Glendale, and then they didn't get an offensive rebound, and I had to drive back, and I was sick for a week.
God bless people that do make that commute that way because it might save them some money and be easier. I'm not built to drive to Omaha.
No, it wasn't fun. I wouldn't do it again.
It's a boring drive.
I wouldn't recommend it either. I've done the drive to Omaha before.
Really?
Yeah, not fun. A lot of nothing.
I tell you, I had my mom's brother, who we don't really know, his family randomly stopped at our house. And I remember going, who's on our couch?
Who the hell's this guy?
That's your cousin. No, knew this person at all.
Those are the best family members when you get introduced and you're like expected to go interact with them. Like, I don't know this.
I didn't even know you existed.
I don't know this person.
That was the situation. Didn't even know they existed.
You got a new cousin.
And I said, how did you guys get here? We drove. And I went, how boring was that drive?
So bad.
Pretty bad.
So bad.
It's not a lot out there, man.
There's nothing.
Not a lot out there.
Nothing but field. Well, hopefully Beaver fans are going. I did want to slip in one Major League Baseball stat here because this continues to blow my mind. Paul Skeens over his last seven starts.
Dude, he was lights out.
You know what his ERA is? 1.12.
Yeah, I was going to say
over his last seven starts. You know how many wins he has in those seven starts?
Two.
One. Right in the middle.
Also, the Mariners are Cal Raleigh and nothing else.
Cal Raleigh's carrying them, baby. Keep carrying them.
MVP season for Cal Raleigh. That would be a feather in the Schultze cap.
That would be pretty solid.
That would be a big one.
Of all the Schultze arguments over the years, that's maybe the best one he's ever made.
Easily his best
take. And then he backed down from the take.
He did. We pressured him out. He was like, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have said that.
You don't back down from the take, man. Let's wrap it up. Game three of the Stanley Cup Final. Answer the poll question. Send you on your way next on The Fan. Now, is this acceptable? I believe it was produced by Kanye.
Jay-Z lost has one? His own issues. Just saying.
He's Jay-Z was in a...
He's got a few issues there.
A lawsuit there for a while.
Got a few issues. It's okay? Are we allowed to listen to him?
He bet...
Where do we draw the line on canceling, gentlemen?
He was good friends with Diddy.
A lot of parties
did
together.
He? I don't know.
Did he?
He bet $1.2 million on the Thunder and Five.
Did he or Jay-Z did?
Jay-Z.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think Diddy can do anything.
I think his probably assets are a little frozen in the current time, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Not a lot of money going towards baby oil.
A little bit.
We got some poll questions up. Actually, not some. One poll question up. You can go vote. It'll be up for the rest of the day. What did you watch the most of over the weekend? We'll get to that here in 1 second. We do have a public apology from one Will Ortner for his lack of performance during the FUP date. And, you know, look, I appreciate the apology.
Dr. Dre produced that song, by the way.
Oh, did he? Okay, yeah. Not a Kanye song. I know Kanye did a lot of Jay-Z stuff.
Well, because Jay-Z wrote, people don't know this, Jay-Z wrote a lot of Dr. Dre's stuff for The Chronic 2001.
Yes, he did.
And so I think Dr. Dre gave him some love back and produced his...
Well, scratch my back, scratch your back.
Yeah, yes.
Kind of situation. Yes. So Will Ortner's apologized. We appreciate it, and we'll consider accepting the apology.
I did it the correct way. But, Notes app on X.
Yeah, it was
that
a Notes
is the
app.
Way everyone has to apologize now. And
that's when you know it's a real apology.
I know, and you know I meant it, and was not in any way joking.
How often do you see those and you don't really read them?
98% of the time.
Have you ever read any of them?
My favorite is when
there's something big and somebody big enough, I might, but like most of them are high school recruits decommitting, and I'm like, I'm not reading this dumb crap.
Glory be to God. My favorite is when they do the Notes app picture with the writing of something, and then in the tweet it says the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it says it in the tweet, and then you took a picture of it saying the same thing just in case you need to reaffirm the message.
Right, right.
Or you don't see one or the other. What did you watch the most of this weekend? 59.6% of you say Beaver baseball.
Yeah.
16.3% say NBA finals, edging out other just ever so slightly, 16%. And then my lovely sport, the Stanley Cup Final, wasn't dead last at 8.1%, but that's to be expected. It is hockey, and I get it. I understand it. Game three is tonight. Back in the continental United States.
Nice Cats.
How does Blue Line Brandon feel about game three?
I'm leaning Panthers.
You're leaning again, Panthers? Take a 2-1 series lead?
I think this is going the full distance. I think it's a game seven series again, but I think it's going to be a back and forth. I think the Ice Cats get two games in a row here.
Ooh, they go up 3-1.
No. They won the last one.
Yeah. Oh, so touche.
So touche. That way, yeah.
They are a -140 favorite tonight. Edmonton +120. On the money line. Blue Line Brandon, 2 for 2 so far in the series.
Let's go.
Keep riding that heater, baby. That will do it for us. If you missed any of the show, go check the podcast, 1080thefan.com. We had Dan Wetzel on to break down the House settlement finally being agreed to. And then Mike Doc Parker, great friend of the show, longtime voice of the Beavs on Oregon State, again punching their ticket back to Omaha. That will do it for us. Thanks so much for being a part of our Monday. Thanks, everybody, for watching on YouTube. Like the video, subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so yet. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Colin is next. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.